What shall we make of the biblical statement that there was once war in heaven? Hello and welcome to The Good Word. I am David Thomas, your host for this series of lessons. I'm happy to have with me two individuals, Brant Berglund and Paul Dibdol, both of whom teach at the Walla Walla University School of Theology, a place I retired from a few years ago, but I'm still doing Good Word. Good Word, for those of you who might not know, is a conversational commentary on the official Sabbath School lesson that's produced by the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. And if you were to Google Sabbath School lesson, you could find the original document. The theme for this quarter, and those lessons come out four times a year, 13 weeks at a time. So for these 13 weeks, the theme is on the great controversy, the controversy between good and evil that flows out in the whole of Scripture. And the lesson today begins with the beginning. Every story has to have a beginning. And as I think about the great controversy, gentlemen, or the story of it, it seems to me that it serves an interesting purpose in life, that it helps us understand a context in which to place ourselves. And we as human beings have a hard time making sense out of life if we don't have a sense of context. And here, depicted in the Bible, is this panoramic vision of a conflict between good and evil that goes from Eden lost to Eden restored. But the first part of the story is what the focus of the lesson is today. It's rather remarkable because it starts with the story of war in heaven. It's hard to think of heaven as a place where there was war, and I'm not suggesting there were Abraham's tanks and stuff up there, but there was some kind of conflict that took place between God and Satan, and he was thrown out. It says that there was no place was found for him and those who supported him in heaven. I don't know if any of you have anything to reflect on that story of beginning.
Well, if the biblical story is to be taken seriously, it means that we who are caught in what I think is a pretty clear controversy ourselves, good and evil. The greatest sorts of movies and novels are those that deal with the issues of good and evil, that we are not immune from this war and that it had an origin outside of us. Only makes some sense, especially if the biblical account of Eden was that Eden was a perfect place. Well, how did the serpent get there too, right? We want a backstory even to where the serpent came from. So it seems to me that a war in heaven begins to make sense, but it is also a sad story.
Yeah, it does provide a starting point. Yeah, the story of war in heaven, it's hard to imagine. Now, there are several passages in the Bible that people look to anchor this story. Ezekiel 28, verses 12 to 15, and Isaiah 14, 12 to 14. These are very familiar passages. It's interesting, though, when you read them, they're not really talking about heaven. So how do we create a link between these passages and a controversy in heaven?
So you mentioned Ezekiel 28 is one of them. And like you said, verse 12, begin, son of man, take up a lament concerning the king of Tyre. So, you know, that's a actual literal king.
Yeah, and the actual city.
We think, well, how is this speaking of something that happened, you know, before Eden even? But if you keep reading it, then you come across certain lines that don't quite seem to fit the king of Tyre. You were the model of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. It's like, well, verse 14, you were anointed as a guardian cherub, for so I ordained you. You were on the holy mount of God. This language seems to, while it purports to be speaking of the king of Tyre, it seems to be using a kind of earthly situation to sort of, I don't know if telescope is the right word, but like to suddenly we realize we're talking about something greater and bigger than just the king of Tyre. We're talking about something that stretches all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah, this transcends humanity, definitely. And in fact, if we were to try and apply this to the king of Tyre, who was not originally a supportive person of the God of Israel, we would find this to be a bit shocking. The language does not fit that context.
Yeah. And yet, though, it seems that what Paul was saying is that when you look at the story of the conflict between good and evil, in many cases in the Bible, you have a local situation that is a conflict situation, particularly between the children of Israel and whoever the other party might be, that is used to illustrate a much bigger conflict between good and evil. And that's what you're talking about here, that in this case, the king of Tyre is the protagonist. And
In Isaiah, it's Babylon, right?
Yeah, king of Babylon.
Yeah.
And yet, again, if you look, you just sort of said it, Dave, but if you look through not just the Old Testament, but including the New Testament, Babylon over time becomes a kind of symbol. It's not just Babylon proper, literally, but it becomes a symbol for all that is arrayed against God. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies in this context.
Yeah, and this is one of the challenges that we face with interpreting some of these figurative pieces, you know, that the language, and I describe it this way, the language suddenly seems to go cosmic. It's not just Babylon or Tyre anymore. It goes poof. You see that also in some of the other sections of the Bible where you have these apocalyptic messages that go on here.
And maybe we get a glimpse in Isaiah 14, too, of how a war can begin, and it seems to begin with self, right? Isaiah 14, verse 13, you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the assembly in the recesses of the north. I will make myself like the Most High. And kind of the aspiration to take over and to dominate, it brings war. That's war follows in the wake of that sort of
And then you're left with this fascinating question. How could a being who lived in a perfect place become focused on self?
And jealous of others.
And that is, I think, the issue, because you referenced the Isaiah passage. If we look at Ezekiel 28 again, it's an echo. Your heart became proud on account of your beauty, and you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. The same.
You corrupted you corrupted yourself. Yeah.
And I suppose we could draw some analogies to people today, right? That if you somehow become proud of your achievements or the way you look or what some ability you have, you can, in a sense, wreck your own ship.
Maybe it's a blessing to be very average looking and not rich and, you know, just average in intelligence or whatever. Just that's a blessing.
Well, I've said for many years, God must like ordinary. He made a lot of it. By the way, did you run into the thing about the name Lucifer? I don't know if you've seen that. I was shocked some years ago to discover that that's not actually the biblical name for Satan. That this is a glitch that remained after the Bible, is the process of being translated, and Lucifer is actually a transliteration of a Latin word that means light bearer, but the translators didn't quite put it in that way, and so people assumed that Lucifer was the name of Satan, and we use that name all the time. His actual name is Satan, the devil. Now, I hope nobody gets all upset over that little observation, but if you Google the name Lucifer, you can read for yourself in some detail how that occurred here. It doesn't change the significance of the passages. It just means that in the translation, somebody didn't transliterate that properly, and here we have this name that's not really a biblical name.
Yeah, in 14:12, Isaiah 14:12, you are, O star of the morning, right? Son of the dawn, this term related to light.
Yeah, and they left that in the Latin term, Lucifer, and didn't translate it to son of the morning. So.
Right.
So Satan and his followers were cast out of heaven. How do we make a connection to earth?
Well, this becomes a bit of a challenge, and part of the reason for me is because in Revelation 12 that it says there was war in heaven and the dragon and his angels were cast out to the earth. I actually think there's a different time sequence to that in Revelation, that isn't specifically speaking about the original fall of Lucifer, but that's talking about a different fall, and that is when Satan himself was cast from heaven permanently. We see evidence in the Old Testament that Satan had access to heaven. We see it when the sons of God were brought before God in the book of Job, that he had access there. Jesus himself says that now the prince of this world is cast out when he was on earth, right? And Satan himself, you know, said, I own the kingdoms of this earth, they're mine to give, when Jesus was tempted. So I think Satan's role as a leader of earth was lost, and he lost his position as a representative of earth. Christ retook that. So I'm not answering your question directly. I just have some questions about that myself from Revelation's context in chapter 12. I believe there's a fall previously. I'm not sure that one's talking about it.
What about Jesus' comment? He saw Satan fall like lightning.
Yeah, Satan fall. And that's when he sends out his disciples, right? And the disciples start transforming the world. He says, yes, when you went out casting out demons, I saw Satan falling from heaven as lightning.
Yeah, so that could be referring to his permanent banishment.
A present experience then when the disciples were doing that through their power given to them by Christ.
in some other reading I've done, especially from Ellen White's writing, she talks about him having access. And mm-hmm. Job, the story of Job is quite convincing to what you say here. How did trouble come to earth then if Satan didn't come down from heaven at the beginning? Or he came and went back and forth, in other mm-hmm. words? Yeah.
It seems he has some access. His priority seems to be to lead the initial pair astray. And if he can do that, then they give him their allegiance instead of the God who created them and put them in the garden. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if he remained a resident of heaven after there was war. Yeah. Maybe he just had access to it.
One way I think about the world today is what we're seeing today is what happens when Satan is allowed to be in charge. How do we like it? Is it working? Is his kingdom good? Everything is perfect?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced of that.
No, in fact, it's pretty bad, actually. In fact, the world looks to be quite a wreck these days. I think you have to throw in here the story of the deception of Eve. And you raised a question earlier about the serpent. I don't know how to answer that. I've always felt a bit of sympathy for Eve because she was deceived. You know, he persuaded her in her innocence of something that wasn't true, telling her she'd be better off if she knew both good and evil. And it sounds like, maybe if I know both sides of the story, I'll be better off. We still fall prey to that, by the way, thinking that if we know evil, we'll be better off. And then I don't want to miss also that a significant part of the story is the promise of a redeemer or a deliverer. Any comments about that?
There's hope in the middle of that story, which started so wonderfully and then goes so tragically wrong. And then, as you said, hope that there will come a day when the serpent, the ancient serpent, will be trampled upon, kind of foreshadowing, I think, of the deliverance that comes through Christ. So,
and by the way, Job knew about that too, because he talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of the big picture of the lessons. Starting with, we can't forget the very ending either, that there's a restoration that takes place on a grand scale. So, well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for participating here. My thanks also to Christian Bailey, our engineer, and my thanks to you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.